south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's start out with an email from none other than the Altiplano Drifter himself. Yeah, he's drifting up here in Central America in the Altiplano, as advertised. He's a repeat offender at my Expat Insider seminars, decided to supercharge his Plan B, and now he's living down here for good. And he sends me this email. He says, "Dear Johnny, the telephone I got at your seminar just died. It bit the dust." All right, Johnny here again. You know me. I have to comment here and there and set up the context of these emails, whether it's necessary or not. Anyway, he talks about the phone he got at the seminar. You know, everybody who comes to my Expat Insider seminars gets a free burner cell phone. Now, there's a variety of telephone and internet companies to choose from. At least, lately, we've been buying phones from fat boy Carlos Sims' phone company, Claro, C-L-A-R-O. Why? Because they've got the best coverage in cities here in Latin America. The other neck-and-neck competitor, Tigo, also with phone service in every Latin country and some European countries too, runs neck-and-neck with Claro, but Tigo phone service has a little bit better coverage if you live slightly outside the city or in the boonies, because they have more cell tower coverage out in the sticks than Claro. Then there's a third ubiquitous, also ran phone company throughout Latin America called Movistar. There are a few more too, but those are the big three. And Movistar telephone and IT service, as M-O-V-I-S-T-A-R, seems to be the choice of lower middle class and poor people throughout Latin America because it's got the cheapest rate per minute phone calls and offers the best deals on free minutes when they're running a special. By the way, all the phone service providers down here have free minute specials that they run once or twice a week. That would be 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 times your minutes for the usual price. And Movistar has the best deals. And naturally, with the lower middle class and poor people, it's all about the money. So that's why you'll see the shoeshine boy and the lady carrying the tortillas on her head carrying a phone with a Movistar SIM chip in it. Oh, and by the way, I did mention this some time ago, but you have to know that the newest rage here in Latin America, especially with the middle and lower middle class and poor folks, is to have a cell phone with a dual chip option. That way you can put, for example, a Movistar chip in there and get really cheap phone calls and stick a Claro or Tigo chip in the other slot. So what's the advantage of that? You see, all the phone companies, Tigo, Claro, Movistar, and there's a few others, allow you to call other people who are using the same phone company service. For example, Tigo to Tigo or Claro to Claro, free of charge, which is why a phone with 2 SIM card slots in it works out so well economically for the lower classes who are really pinching pennies, or I should say pinching centavos. So, for example, if you have a dual chip phone and you want to call someone and you don't know what kind of service they're using, Tigo, Movistar, Claro, whatever, you call out using the Movistar chip because it's the cheapest per minute cost. Meanwhile, you've got your Claro or Tigo chip on standby to call friends who you know have the same service. That way, the calls are free. Which begs the question, then, why don't they have phones that have triple slots in them? Well, that would get kind of ridiculous, I guess. But certainly, people in the lower socioeconomic rungs would buy them. Then they could juggle between all the different services and get free, unlimited phone calls all the time. Of course, the phone companies would not like that, would they? Confused yet? Well, don't be. It's one of those things you pick up on fast when you have boots on the ground down here. So anyway, our email from the Altiplano Drifter goes on to say, "Johnny, the phone you gave us at the seminar died. I'm badly in need of a new phone or SIM card. But I went to a Claro phone store in one of the malls, and they wouldn't sell me one without a national ID or a passport. And I don't want my name and real debts all over the place. So what should I do?" Aha, our Altiplano Drifter is a man after my own heart. He wants to stay under the radar and remain as anonymous as he possibly can. However, he ran into a typical gringo catch-22, which is easy to overcome. Of course, we all know if you use Google, Twitter, Yahoo, Twaddle, Fakebook, any of the big email services and anti-social networks, you lost your privacy a long time ago and have a gigantic footprint. You're all over the net whether you know it or not, and there are some million advertisers targeting you. And you also know that when you come down to Latin America, if you plan things right, you can start off fresh, get most of your privacy and anonymity back. And then when you buy things like internet or phone service, You've already planned a nice disinformation program to beat them at their own game. All right, let's get into this. Remember, the altiplanar drifter is in a catch-22 position. He went to a Claddo office in a mall and they wanted his DPI or passport. Now, I assume he was in a good-sized mall and went to one of the main Claddo offices. All the big cell phone and internet providers have main offices in big malls. And the setup is usually like this. When you walk in, you'll see they have a lot of employees, a lot of service counter desks. In fact, they're pretty well organized, at least for Latin America. But you know what? I stay away from those places when I'm going to buy a SIM chip or a phone if I go to one of the little kiosks that are in smaller malls and on the streets practically everywhere. Why? Because they don't ask for your passport. And if they do, they don't copy it because they don't have a copy machine, nor do they scan it. They just write your name and passport number down for their records. But there's one or two more steps as follows. You buy a SIM chip from them. Let's say it's $5. Load it up with some extra minutes. You know, when you buy them new, you usually get 100 minutes free. But to get those free minutes, you have to pay a couple bucks and add a few extra minutes of your own. That kind of initializes it. Anyway, after you've done that, you'll get a text message. So these phone companies have worked out a method so as not to put these little kiosks out of business who are selling their phones. I mean, look, they don't have a machine to make a copy of your passport. By the way, in the past, when you'd buy a telephone or SIM card, they never asked you for your national ID or passport. That's part of a new ruling by most Latin governments to stop extortions over the telephone by bad guys. At least that's the premise, and it sounds good on paper. But you see, lard-ass government, poop-for-brains bureaucrats figure that if there's a database of IDs and passports and such of people buying phones, if there's an extortion attempt, they could track it back to the original buyer and nab him. Yeah, right. In a second, you'll see why that's a stupid assumption, especially since any one of us can do the hack and get around it in about 3 minutes. All right, where were we? Oh, yeah, we were at the little kiosk. We bought a phone. They did not ask for a DPI, ID, or passport because these are little independent guys running these kiosks. They sell all the available phones and phone services and aren't representatives for any one company. So anyway, you got the phone. You try to initialize it. You get a text message in Spanish. And it says, in order to complete the initialization process, please enter your DPI code, which is a 13-digit code in most Latin countries. A DPI is your national ID card. And the thing is, you see, if you haven't got temporary or permanent residency, you won't have a DPI card, only a passport. But they're not asking you for your passport because that's not part of the system. Why would they? Since 99.9% of the people who want to buy a phone are citizens of that country with a DPI, a national ID card. So what to do, what to do? Well, here's the hack. The trick is just to stick in any old 13-digit number. Press send and voila, your phone is activated. Talk about one of the easiest hacks available, huh? Better yet, if you feel funny punching in some random 13-digit number, you could play the dumb gringo act and ask the guy to help you out. And chances are he'll stick his own DPI number in there. I've witnessed that more than a few times because, you know, he's an independent and he wants to make that sale. He's not on salary from any phone company. So if you need a phone or SIM chip, if you go to one of the main offices, they'll ask for your passport. But in the small phone kiosks you see everywhere, they won't. Now, about carrying your passport in Latin America, once in a while you'll be asked to show it. You know, when you're checking into a hotel or renting a place, which is why many astute gringos and expats who prefer to remain way under the radar, small footprint and all that, carry with them a copy of their passport, only that passport has been photoshopped. Now, I've seen some of the results, and they can be pretty creative. Remember, in the case of phone companies, all they want is a copy of your passport. Not a certified copy, nothing formal, just something for their files. Now, remember, any phone, utility company, department store, whatever, any commercial outfit that has your dad's is going to sell them to marketers, just like Google, Yahoo, Twaddle, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Of course, when you're dealing with governments and bureaucrats, you want to give them your correct passport dats, or else you could get yourself in trouble if things don't match. But when it comes to department store purchases, phone companies, utility companies, rental contracts, or anytime someone asks you for a copy of your passport, your choice if you want to give them the real one and have your dats once again spread all over the map. Or you can do something that some gringos and expats do. They Photoshop out their last name on that passport. Hell, a lot of people have just two names. Suppose your name on your passport is Johnny Martin Zdanowicz. So just eliminate the last name. Now you're Johnny Martin. Hey, and I'm not telling you to do anything illegal. Though it would be illegal if you're dealing with a government office and you did something like that, so I don't recommend it. However, when you're forced to give it up to some non-governmental jerks like at the phone company or utility company, I'm all for flipping them the virtual bird. I don't want my dads floating out there in the ether. That's why I never do searches through Google, nor do I have a Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter account, nor do I have a LinkedIn account either. That's one place where they really vacuum up your debts and sell them off to the highest bidder, even the lowest bidder. By the way, if you're hanging around or staying in any particular Latin country, you really never have to carry your original passport around with you, only a copy. Even if you're driving and get pulled over by the cops, they're only going to ask you for the car registration and your driver's license. I don't know why people get the idea they have to carry their passport around with them everywhere they go. That's nuts. And dangerous, because if you ever lose it or it somehow goes through the laundry, it's a huge hassle to go down to the nearest U.S. consulate and get a replacement. Although I have what's called a passport pouch, a concealed pouch that's very stealthy. Still, I never put my passport in there unless I'm traveling across country borders. Then you'll need it. So in mine, I have my driver's license and a photocopy of my passport. Debit card, actually two debit cards, a 1 ounce gold Canadian maple leaf and a 1/4 ounce gold maple leaf, and a very tiny little flash drive with a very high resolution scan of my passport, totally encrypted, of course, scans of other pertinent papers and documents, also encrypted. In fact, the whole damn flash drive is encrypted. Oh, and I have a scan of my address book and my secret numbers. Everybody's got secret numbers, right? Passwords, codes, etc. Encrypted on that flash drive, too. So that flash drive is a backup that has most of your life in it. Oh, and I should mention, if you're buying a phone, SIM card, mobile internet service, whatever, they're going to ask you for your DPI, your national ID, and if you don't have residency, you won't have one, so they'll ask you for your passport, and they'll always ask you for your email and home address. Well, again, you don't want to give them your real email, which is why I like Proton Mail and Start Mail so much, because you can create alias emails. With Start Mail, you can make 10 of them, which is a very cool foil, because whoever you give it to, you know they're going to sell that email address to all the marketers, and you'll start getting junk mail. And when you receive it at your Start Mail or Proton Mail inbox, it'll be flagged with that alias address. So you can watch as you start accumulating junk mail in the alias address and just delete it. Voila, it does not exist anymore. No more junk mail from that account. And to me, just that one feature, the ability to have 10 alias email addresses to eliminate and add to, is worth the $30 or $40 a year I pay for the service. But what about when you're forced to give up your address? Well, as I've mentioned many times before, give them your lawyer's office address. Only make sure you cleared it with your lawyer first, because they will be getting your mail then. Now, suppose you bought a car and you paid cash. Certainly, they're going to ask you for your email address and your home address. Their paperwork demands all that, so you won't be able to get out the door without giving up some kind of address. So give them your lawyer's address. Generally, if you're a repeat client, he'll be glad to do it. Of course, you have to remember if it's a utility hookup like electric power, or satellite TV or cable internet service, you have to give your real address because they have to be able to come out to your house and install it, right? But for everything else, many expats and gringos I know say, screw them, and play the disinformation game as much as they can get away with. Then again, if you're one of the clueless gringos you often meet on the gringo tourist trail down here, especially in expat bars and discos and such, the ones that carry their passports around with them all the time and say, if they want my passport, no problem, it's right here. I've got nothing to hide. Then, you know, there's no use arguing or explaining the world to them, because they're living in a mainstream media fantasy. Yet another reason I don't like living or hanging out on the gringo tourist trail. Way too many do-gooders? Public school teachers on Social Security? Hanging around with other public school teachers on Social Security, who in turn are hanging around and clubbing up with retired U.S. government workers and bureaucrats. Seems like they're always the ones. People who never worked a day in the private sector, nor ever had a business themselves, they're the ones who will say, when you're in a conversation about privacy or Big Brother, they'll say, what are you so paranoid about? You got something to hide? I don't. My life's an open book. I never did anything illegal. Of course, they never read 3 felonies a day, but that's to be expected. And sometimes if I haven't tuned them out completely by then, I'll say, so the government's your friend, huh? So then why are you retired down here and not spending your money in the good old US of A? And the usual comeback is, why, it's the cost of living. It's so cheap and easy to live down here. And sometimes, but not often, my comeback might be, do you ever think about why a Social Security check will get you a month of hamburger helper and cat food dinners up in the States, But down here, it'll get you steak and just about anything else you want. Don't you wonder how that happened? Ah, but they don't get it. All right, changing gears a bit. You know, I was on a construction site the other day. Gringo building a house. That happens down here, you know. Why not? If you're on the job site checking things out regularly, you can get a beautiful first world style house for around 30 to 40 bucks a square foot. You know what that means, don't you? 2,000 square foot house, 60 to 80 grand. First world all the way. That'd be the proper anti-seismic design too. Concrete, concrete block, rebar, rainforest hardwood doors and details, and really excellent Spanish tile. First world kitchen and bathroom fixtures too. Now, I just picked that 2,000 square foot thing out of my hat because that seems to be a nice, round, spacious number that people are familiar with. Of course, a lot of people are used to living in smaller houses up in the States, 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. You could do that too, or go extremely spacious from 3, 4, 5, or even 6,000 square feet if you like. But generally, the main trajectory for a plan B is to scale down. Simplify. Less is more and all that. And the bigger the house you have, the more complicated your life becomes because you have to fill those rooms. The more things you own, the more they start owning you. Now, you've heard me mention over and over again about the gigantic real estate bubble here. That's in new, already completed housing. Meaning there are tens of thousands of upscale units that are completely empty. No one's ever lived in them yet. They're brand new, but still it can be 2 or 3 years old. You see what I mean? So there's a huge supply and very little demand because, you see, 95% of all the buildings and projects built or are under construction now are in the so-called upper middle class to wealthy segment, and only about 5 to 10% of Latins could ever afford the mortgage. Even so, the majority of the people that can afford those places are tied down with big mortgages and houses already. So contractors and developers don't do any market research at all. They've got no understanding of markets. Though they will tell you there's very little profit in building low-end tract homes. All the profit is in the high-end sector. Their thinking is they could build a really nice place for 50 or 60 grand and sell it for 200,000 or 300,000. Now, expat Eddie, the armchair philosopher, says that's because these developers, who obviously have more money than brains, watched way too many gringo house hunting reality shows. Yep, the same shows you have up in the States are down here too, translated into Spanish. And you know, every time there's an episode, there's a buyer out there somewhere. Well, that's not happening down here. So you've got all these high-end properties that no one can afford, tens of thousands of brand new empty units. That's why it's a golden opportunity for gringos to rent. But you know, a lot of gringos and expats have it as their dream to build exactly the house they want. And you just heard me explain in numbers what a great deal it is to build your own place. All you need is the land, right? Well, not so fast. If you're in or near any big Latin city in one of the desirable zones for gringos and expats to live, land ain't cheap. There's a good reason why, too. If you're a Latin developer who was stupid enough to build a high-end project, you're having a terrible time selling it. In fact, no one even comes and looks at it. Still, you have to have a full maintenance staff or the place will deteriorate and you won't get anybody to come through at all. So as the months tick by, you're paying out and it's killing you. However, if you're a person or a Latin developer with raw, unimproved land, your yearly property taxes are zilch to negligible. Not to mention, raw land needs no guards or maintenance, except for the occasional guy with a machete trimming the weeds back from the street. So a lot of these guys put their land up for sale at a very steep price and just sit on it. Years and years go by and they don't budge on the price. They're just not desperate enough to sell it. Why should they sell if it's not costing them anything to sit on it? So it's the guys that are land rich who keep the prices near the cities, etc., propped up so very high. Of course, the farther you get away from a tourist area or a medium or large sized Latin city, the more land prices drop dramatically. Good example, if you're anywhere near the Pan-American Highway, which runs all the way from Alaska to Panama, you know, that's the main artery of Mexico and Central America too, where most of the big cities and building action is. So if you're planning on buying any land, say within a quarter to a half mile on a side road branching off from the Pan-American Highway, you'll be paying 3, 4, 5, even 10 times as much for that land as you would if that land was a mile or 2 or 10 from the Pan-American, or what they call Highway Interamericano. Here's a boots-on-the-ground example. I was visiting a real nice gated guarded community, an ecological gated guarded community, loaded with trees, a river going through it. If your idea of paradise is looking out your window and seeing woods, mountains, streams, exotic birds, etc., this is it. And this gringo friend of mine who found the place paid around $25,000 for a third of an acre. These are fully developed wooded lots, utilities provided. This development's around a 10 or 15 mile drive from the Pan American Highway. So it's a nice meandering 15 to 20 minute ride from the main drag. Now, there are some other subdivisions pretty much just like it, in the same basic area but much closer to the Pan American Highway. Maybe just a 2 or 3 minute drive away. And there, a quarter to a third of an acre is going for $100,000. See what I'm saying? That's why you really need to get boots on the ground here and check out all that stuff so you can get a good idea exactly where you want to live and where the deals are. So anyway, I was visiting my gringo friend, and by the way, this is the first house he's ever built. Of course, he's not the contractor. He's not actually supervising the construction of it, but as recommended, he's heard me talk about this. He shows up at the site at least every other day to make sure the construction guys aren't skimping and doing it all according to the architect's print. So he shows up with the architect and they go over what's been done since the last time they've been there. It keeps the contractor and the workers honest, you know? They know when the griggle comes, if he gets mad, they gotta tear something out and redo it. Do that a couple times and they know exactly what kind of guy you are and what kind of details you expect. So anyway, I went over to the building site with this gringo buddy of mine, and the project had been underway for around 2 months. They had poured the footings and the workers were laying out the black courses for the first floor. Now, I know why he wanted me over there. He wanted me to give him some feedback, check things out a bit. By the way, that's why I don't always answer my phone and why I change my SIM chip number about every 6 months. So I checked it out and things looked good for a couple months into the project. It was moving along nicely. However, my buddy had a kind of a scowl on his face. He said, "Johnny, I want you to see something." So we walked around the back where the cement block and cement guys were putting a few rows down, about 8 or 10 feet in the air. He said, "Johnny, look at those ladders they're using. Is that normal? Look like right out of the Flintstones." He said, "I can't believe it. They made their own ladders. Not a single store-bought ladder on the site. They made them with 2x4s. He said, "If that's normal, it can't be safe." I said, "Are you kidding? They always make their own ladders. And after the job, they'll end up in your garage. You won't be able to lift them, though, because they're so damn heavy." I said, "Look, you think your contractor is going to go to Costco or Ace Hardware and drop $300 on a nice aluminum or fiberglass ladder? Forget about it. Not when he can take $20 worth of your 2x4s and knock together 4 or 5 ladders in a half an hour." He said, "Yeah, but I wouldn't go up on one of those things. They look dangerous." I said, "Man, if you want to go out and buy some nice ladders for these guys, be my guest. But these cement and block workers are rough on equipment. Man, you hand over a couple of aluminum ladders to those guys, they'll destroy them in a week." I said, "Check out the Flintstone models they built. They're practically indestructible. Heavy as hell. They're made out of that dense reinforced pine, but indestructible." I said, "Compare that with an aluminum ladder." Then I pointed to the far ladder. I said, "Look, there's 2 guys in that ladder. Each of them has 2 cement blocks. You know how long an aluminum ladder would last under that load? Mark my words, you'll see 3 or 4 guys at a time on those wooden ladders. Nothing to worry about." Then he said, "Johnny, you know, every time I come out to the job site, I see something that scares me. My contractor, I found out he's not bonded. In fact, he never even heard of insurance coverage for contractors on a job site. He said, I'm worried. I'm not good with that." He said, "What if someone falls and breaks his neck?" I said, "Man, sooner or later, you're going to realize you're not in Kansas, Dorothy. You see these guys complaining? No, they're happy, and they're only making $15 a day. Nobody's bonded, no job site insurance, no workman's comp. Yet, no one's forcing these guys to work. They're glad to be here, glad to have a steady job. And you know what? They actually like their jobs. Look at them. They're goofing around, laughing, having a good old time, but still working their asses off. Then, look at us gringos. Have you ever done or had a job where you had that much fun? I doubt it. Up in the first world, that almost never happens when you're working for the man. It might happen once in a while, if you're your own boss and can make all the decisions and control things. But as for me, I've never been happy working for somebody else. How about you? Though down here in Latin America, it seems most people are happy just to be working, whether it's for the man or for themselves. In fact, just recently I was talking to a Latin psychologist, little pint-sized guy, about 5 foot tall. Body of a Roman gladiator, though. I met him at a health club. He's one of those guys who works out like a maniac, yet his diet consists almost entirely of Coca-Cola and pizza. How'd that happen, huh? There's no doubt you could look good on the outside and be a mess on the inside. Anyway, he's a trained psychologist, got a degree at a Latin American university for what that's worth, and he says, it's not the practice of psychology that's completely different between the first world and the third world. It's the clients or the patients that you have. He said he was surprised to learn that up in the States, a huge percentage of the clients that go to a psychiatrist or psychologist are there because they're depressed, they hate their jobs, and feel like they're on a kind of a treadmill and their lives are meaningless. He says his practice here in Latin America, he works as a psychologist at a government hospital, by the way, because, like he said, you basically can't earn a living and move out of the house if you're in private practice. Hey, maybe that's a good thing, huh? Anyway, he lives with his mom and his two sisters, and he's 28 years old. Typical, huh? Anyway, the point is, he said he's never had a client complain that they were sad and depressed because they were in an unfulfilling dead-end job. Oh, he's had clients that were sad and depressed, but not about their jobs. So it really boils down to the fact that no matter how mundane a job a Latin person might have, they smile, laugh, have fun, and try to make the best of it. There have been some Latin universities that have taken polls on job satisfaction, and the answers bear out that Latinos are much more satisfied and happier with their jobs than first world people are with theirs, though that might be a double-edged sword. And why? The third world remains the third world. The fact is, if you're happy and content with your job, what's the point of studying or working harder to get to the next level? Hey, now, there's a conundrum for you. Is it better to be happy in third world with a minimum lifestyle? Or be first world, have all the toys and goodies, and a lot of times be depressed and unhappy? It's a question for the ages, but it does allow a lot of wiggle room for the gringo advantage. So how about you get some boots on the ground and see some of that for yourself? Find out firsthand what I'm talking about. The best and fastest way to do that, of course, is come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. The next one will be this summer, July 2018, beginning Saturday, July 7th, and ending on Thursday, July 12th. Once again, we'll be in and around Guatemala, Central America, way off the gringo tourist trail, right smack dab in the middle of that famous Altiplano region. That means spring-like weather all year round. So to get all the info and sign-up information, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. If you sign up soon, you'll get in on those early bird discounts. And if you're a repeat offender, we always have repeat offenders, remember, you get $1,000 off the early bird discount price. And everyone who signs up gets a free one-hour Skype or phone consultation with yours truly. So why not get in on what some people are calling the greatest boots-on-the-ground expat experience possible? Again, just go to www.thenewexpat.com and find out how you can drink from the fire hose, too. In other words, get yourself a 2 to 5 year head start on your own Plan B.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.